back with episode 798 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Oh, this is Gary from Jacksonville, and we have a short week this week, don't we, John? Only 17 shows.
That's right. Only 17, and we still managed to have one that didn't have any scores for it, but that's okay. It was a little crazy week for everybody.
Did it even air? I can't couldn't find a reference to it.
I thought that it did. Maybe
it was supposed to, but I never actually saw it. By the way, guys, what we're talking about is Elementary, and I, at the moment, with Edmund out, I'm the only person watching it, and I admit to not catching it live, so to speak, but I could not find it anywhere on demand or on the internet, interwebs anywhere, and I'm sort of scratching my head that I don't even know if it came out this week.
Well, I can confirm that one way or the other, so hold on for one moment as I do that. But again, did you get the disclaimer, or were you still...
No, I did not. I was still questioning that one. But anyway...
You know what? You're actually correct. It got delayed a week. So it actually came out tonight as we are recording.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yes, so actually, you are off the hook for that one.
Because I did want to watch it, I just couldn't find it, so that's good to know. But anyway, besides the show, which didn't air this week, we will be talking about several other shows that did air over the past week. And when we talk about them, we will talk about Lives Saved, People Killed, Wonderful Plot Lines, Lousy Plot Lines, and we're going to discuss it all from, you know, from A to Z. So we don't apologize for any of our spoilers. We just wanted to warn you that they will happen.
That's right. And as we said before, we only have 16 episodes to go through here. So a little bit less than last time. So it might be a little bit shorter show since the last one was longer. But we do have a bottom three and a top three regardless. So let's go ahead and get to the first one here, which is Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 15, 100 Days. As President Kirkman releases an agenda to reset his presidency, Alex makes a controversial public statement that threatens to derail it. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. And, well, I have to say, even though, to be perfectly blunt, if you watch this episode, if you watch this show, you know that this particular series of speeches and town hall answers was really quite topical and really got into things that are... shall we say, current? And very pointedly so. And I think that it's very obvious that this wants to be the next-gen West Wing. And I don't think the writing is that good. So all it does when they try to be topical and political to that degree and start making statements that are meant to be reflective of current events, it kind of highlights to me how they are not what they are trying to be. So it just makes me want to go back and rewatch the actual West Wing show. I guess Aaron Sorkin's pretty happy with Designated Survivor for that, but the branding of this show is very odd. It comes across in some cases as if it wants to be kind of, like I said, the next-gen West Wing, but then there are certain cases where there is advertising that makes it seem like it is 24 presidential version. So I don't think they even know what kind of show they have yet. And it's 15 episodes in, so who knows.
And how is Kiefer Sutherland working in this role? I know we have such a, so many people have such a 24 mindset about him.
I think that it's perfectly fine. I don't think that I don't think that he's the biggest problem by any means. I think he actually really tries to sell the whole thing, but I think that it's just first season jitters. Maybe they need to really find themselves. So, yeah, not the best episode of the series. I think that they tried to go a little bit too political and topical, and it kind of fell apart for me. If you could take the next one here, Gary, it's a familiar show.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about Iron Fist, Season 1, Episode 4, 8 Diagram, Dragon Palm. Colleen's extracurricular activities begin to spread. Ward gives Colleen a stern warning. Danny makes a radical pricing proposal and a surprising discovery. Dum dum dum. And this came in at a 7.25. I realize this came in low this week, but if this episode felt a lot better for me than previous episodes have, it felt a lot better actually. I enjoyed the fact that we now know the Father Meekum is now telling them to stop fighting Danny's claim to the company. We finally learned the secret about what's going on with the hand, or at least part of it. We've got to see Danny actually acting as a responsible adult, it seems. While people might disagree with some of his choices, at least he's making choices and standing by them. We also see Colleen still going into these fighting matches and things like that. And while she tells her students that she implies that it's dishonorable and that they shouldn't do that, yet they are. So I feel like things are moving forward and progressing for the first time in 2.5 episodes. So while I didn't give it a crazy good score, I've really felt there was a lot of improvement in this episode. And I sort of like the new paths that have opened where the show is going to go. It seemed pretty stuck in this whole Danny thing, and now it's not anymore.
Yeah, I think this is the beginning of where I was kind of indicating last time the series is actually starting to evolve a little bit, which is good. It was absolutely necessary for that to happen. Yeah, I don't know if it's really a huge change. It's an incremental change in the right direction, though. And we are getting a little more insight into Danny, for better or worse, but yeah, I do think that the focus on other characters is helping. For me, I mean, this is an episode where I completely understand how certain people did get to the whole rich white boy privilege type of conclusion, because he literally says that he wanted to be Iron Fist and pushed to be Iron Fist solely because people told him he couldn't do it. Mm. It's a little bit narcissistic, to say the least. And he even says that his entire life, whenever someone would tell him he couldn't do it, he'd pout and basically say, oh, I can because I want it. Yeah, that really comes across as spoiled, rich little brat. So I can get that completely. Also, the whole fight with the triads in the hallway. If you're going to try to invoke the Daredevil stunt choreography, at least even a fraction as good as the Daredevil choreography, because this was bad. Very bad.
You say bad, because it was so slow?
It was extremely slow, and you could tell that they really hadn't worked it through and run it through very often before they actually tried to do it. And that's the admission of everybody involved, that they kind of would wing some of these fight sequences, which is really not a good idea. You never want to do that. The guy who plays Danny Rand, I mean, this is where some people criticize his style and whether or not he was good enough. He even said there were some days where he got 15 minutes of instruction before they filmed. And it shows.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It
definitely shows.
You know, I have issues with the actor in general, honestly, but he's... I'm not sure what sort of mentality they were looking for, but it just seems so not in keeping with the origin of the character. That, or at least how he was portrayed in the books, that I just sort of scratched my head of where they're going with this. I think they took this whole naive boy into the corporate world thing a little too seriously. They really needed somebody, I think, and maybe he'll become it, but, you know, who's a little bit more wise to the ways of the world, even if he doesn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt this was a start, though. I mean, I felt this episode was an improvement on, just about every episode so far, but... did you like the sort of developments that happened? I like this, the opening up about the hand. I like the idea that he's now, there's no more of this stupid games about who he is kind of stuff. That's all played out now.
Yeah, I did like some of those elements. I mean, everything that with Colleen I really enjoyed, as usual. It all comes back to Danny. I mean, really. But the writers, too. Come on, guys. The Danny's little crusade about the drug pricing. Oh, just painfully naive. I can't believe that writers put that in the mouth of anybody, to be honest with you. So if any of them even remotely think that that was him, you know, making a strong and meaningful crusade, ooh, yeah, that's not saying a lot. But anyway, obviously, this episode coming in at a 7.25, it's still towards the bottom of the list. It's making our bottom three this week, but I'll be honest with you, this is actually improvement for the show from an overall perspective.
I agree.
All right. Down towards the bottom of the list, unfortunately, again, we have Prison Break Season 5, Episode 2, Canyel Otis. Otis? Otis? I don't know. Why do they have to come up with these kinds of weird things? Anyway, as Lincoln and C-Note search for the Sheik of Light, Michael and his cellmate Whip attempt an escape from that prison that I can't pronounce.
That OG Giga?
Oh, yeah.
Close enough?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to point to that at the screen. All right. This one came in at an average of 7, so pretty much a dead average episode. I really don't have a lot to say about it other than the fact that it's, once again, as we said last time, really depending a lot on the cast and the people having a high nostalgia for seeing these guys play together. And I do enjoy seeing these guys play together because I enjoy watching them play together on Legends of Tomorrow. So I don't mind it. It's just the writing is still, maybe it's still trying to get things moving, but it's still not the top-notch type of stuff I would be hoping for. All right, that takes us to the top three for the week, and we start off here with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. 7.
You got it wrong again, John.
I did? Ah, you're right. I'm going to get myself thrown into a cell and tortured horribly, aren't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they got that nice little machine there. That,
yes.
I've heard Agents about, but I don't want to go in the room. Yes.
Agents of Hydra, Season 4, Episode 17, Identity and Change. As Daisy and Simmons struggle to discover an escape route to the real world, the identity of the inhuman leader of the Resistance is revealed. That's right. And we gave this one, collectively, an 8.5. Mm. And Gary, why don't you get us started off on this one?
Yeah, I think my favorite part of this episode was I guess it's not any of the main characters per se. I enjoyed Max's little I don't know if silhouette's the right word, but his little part of this whole storyline. You know, here's a guy just trying to just keep his nose down, stay out of trouble, raise his daughter who's alive in the framework, and go about his business and not do anything. And we see when people randomly get shaken down because they might be have some tendency to be an inhuman. And then we see, it probably had to be Ada, set up Daisy so phenomenally well. With Mac talking like he remembers everything. And oh, what a heartbreaking scene. Even he was heartbroken to do it. But, he didn't have a choice because of his daughter and everything. And it was still just a heart-wrenching scene at the same time when she realized that Daisy realized that Mac wasn't really Mac, at least not fully. And it was so sad. She thought she had found another ally. And then to find out that, that's not the case, to see how Ada just, has twisted and corrupted Fitz so hard. And, it was a very sad ending, and I just don't see how they can get out of it. And at the same time, the hopelessness, I think, raised my emotional investment in the episode, and I did like it. It was interesting also, Ada sort of the way she was rebelling against being referred to as Ada because she doesn't want to be a robot, or was saying she wasn't a robot. And that was an interesting take that she considers herself, I guess she doesn't consider herself one anymore in the framework either. And that, what else? We got to see Ward save the day. That was interesting. And surprisingly, I did not expect to see Jeffrey Mace pull into this episode. Right. I had assumed that S.H.I.E.L.D. was really gone, and to see him there and leading at least some size organization really shocked me. This wasn't where I was seeing it going, but it does give me hope that there will be a positive ending to it. And what else did I see? We had Radcliffe. What am I thinking? And then we saw Fitz kill the original Ada. I don't remember what her original name is. But
I don't remember either.
But yeah, just killer in cold blood, and Simmons' reaction to it was just was so sad. And she's like, "Oh my gosh, he's not just needs to be woken up like Coulson did, but something's much worse with him." And there was so much shakeup and development that I really enjoyed this a lot. You gave it a reasonably high score as well. What was your? Did you have any negatives to it? I guess even though you gave it such a high score.
Not particularly. I think that I gave it pretty much that score for roughly the same reasons that you did. I think that the additional information regarding the framework and how it works, and the showdown with Radcliffe and everything that happened there, there seems to be a little bit of complication going on between Fitz and Simmons, even in the framework, that I will enjoy watching evolve. So, yeah, I thought that this was a really strong episode. Edmund had some comments on this here, and so I'll go ahead and read those out. This is more like what I'd hoped for with this arc. Ever since Fringe and certainly Baked into Dollhouse, exploring alternate worlds and personalities has become a genre staple. This twist on it is working out nicely. I'm loving the spotlight on Fitz and... Oh, come on. And the actor who plays Fitz getting to know show off some acting range. What's his name? I'm calling him just Ian. He has to just go by Ian. He's not allowed to have a last name because I can't pronounce that. So, yeah, I agree. Fitz is getting a lot of good material in this arc. Would you agree?
Yeah, he's definitely expanding his range from the the geeky nerd with the crush slash budding love relationship. So yeah, no, it's nice, and honestly, he plays it pretty darn well too, which is almost as scary as that too. He's he really eats it up, and it's fun. You know, much like we see Ward being the hero in this episode. You know, people are flipping what we usually expect of them, and it definitely is entertaining.
Yeah, I have to say, absolutely, this is definitely one of my favorite arcs for the show in general, and while it's true that this arc couldn't exist without those other seasons and so forth, I do feel like this is really one of the better storytelling efforts that they've put out there. It's so good that I am convinced that they believe that this might be the last story that they get to tell, because this really does wrap the entire series in some respects up with a bow, so I'm hoping I'm wrong, but it wouldn't be a bad way for the series to end. I'll put it that way. At least that's what I anticipate, given how many good directions this could go in. But anyway, let's see. Going on to our number two show for the week, we have The Americans, Season 5, Episode 6, Crossbreed. Gabriel stuns Philip and Elizabeth with a sudden announcement and a crushing revelation about Philip's past. And this one came in at an 8.75, and I'll go ahead and read out Edmund's comments here. A deceptively slow episode with some stunning meditations on fatherhood. Philip learning the truth about his father and how much he may have been groomed for this life. Stan becoming more and more of a surrogate to Henry with all the danger that hints at. How much has Henry been picking up on while ignored by the rest of his family? Losing Gabriel, who has been a father figure to both of them, and the stunning decision to introduce him to Paige. And Elizabeth, perhaps, getting some unintentional benefit from casing the psychiatrist's office, unburdening herself of last season's fatal mugging. Peter Gabriel, as ever, punctuating major character moments. Yeah, he kind of encapsulates this episode extremely well. I really don't have a lot else to say. It's just been a really interesting season in terms of how much it's exploring the key relationships within the family. And I love Paige getting further and further into the business, the family business, I guess you could say. And finally, at our number one slot for the week, and unfortunately, Edmund could not be here to discuss this or tell us about it himself, but it is Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 1, Mabel. In the season 3 premiere, Jimmy and Chuck's relationship deteriorates, Kim feels the pressure of running her own firm, and Mike investigates the note left on his car. Edmund gave this one a 9, and his commentary here is, Jimmy and Mike's stories are still progressing on parallel but compelling tracks. While the previews have been trumpeting Gus Fring's eventual return, for now, the fallout from Jimmy's fraud last season is being beautifully played by both Michael McKean and Rhea Seahorn. Chuck's tape may not carry legal weight, but he's going to play it however he can. And Kim's showing the weight of carrying Jimmy's secrets almost palpably. And watching Mike take apart the station wagon was a page right out of the conversation. Always good company to keep. Except Mike does figure it out with some brilliant subterfuge. And the Cinnabon flash forwards are becoming relevant as we see how much Jimmy's rebellious streak has been beaten down by his previous lives. I'm sure all of that means something to people who watch Better Call Saul. It doesn't mean a lot to me, unfortunately, but I can definitely hear the passion for this particular episode and the happiness with this episode in Edmund's comments. I'm sure you agree, Gary.
Oh, yeah. He always loves this show very much. So.
Yes, and it came in at a 9, obviously, so it is, in fact, our number one show for the week. So, yeah, good for them and their return for their third season. What that means is that we can delve into a couple of other episodes before we wrap things up. Like I said, a bit of a short show this time because we did go long last time. But Gary, anything that you'd like to dig into? I have a feeling I know which one it's going to be. Just possibly.
Huh. Well, you know, there is one, as I said, I've been leaning towards. But I did actually, I'd like to pick your brain on a show that I haven't watched because, as I said, it is on my ready to binge list. Could you talk to me about The Magicians for just a quick moment and then we might jump somewhere else?
Okay, that's fine. Yes, The Magician, Season 2, Episode 11, The Rattening. Quentin and Julia undertake a difficult journey. This one came in at an 8. And, yeah, what can I say about The Magicians? One of the best things about this particular show for me is that they really are taking their time with the arc this season, although I will mention that this particular episode starts pulling things together in such a way that I really did not appreciate just how much they were seeding into the season previously, but that's because it was buried with some really great comedic material around it, so you didn't quite know how much was being laid out for you. But this show is very quirky. What I love about it is that you can have deadly serious scenes, and then the next thing you know, the cast is breaking out into a rendition of One Day More from Les Miserables. And it somehow works. It just comes together. So I really do enjoy it just on that level, that you're never quite sure where the humor is going to go. They definitely lean more towards the mature humor, which is nice as well, because you could definitely see how they are or could degrade a little bit into, you know, just being a shade of Harry Potter or something to that effect. But there are some nice dark undertones here, a lot about loss and inability to let somebody go, and sometimes, especially in a world with a lot of dangerous magic, maybe there's a justification for that. But yeah, it's been a really good season. It's been at least as good as the first season was, and I'm glad to say that it has been renewed for a third season.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as I said, it's on my...
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's on your list. But it is one of those shows that some people say, should I watch this? And it's hard for me to say yes or no, because it really depends. If you can get into the quirky sense of humor that it has, and it is a very bizarre sense of humor, then yes, I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. If the sense of humor doesn't really translate to you, it could be a slog. Anytime that you go into comedy, that's the problem, is that you're kind of banking that the majority of people that get that comedy coming at you, they're going to accept it. That said, I think that this probably is, I wouldn't say that it is exactly the level or hilarity of, say, Archer, but you know that kind of knowing, tongue-in-cheek, winking at the audience comedy that Archer has?
Yes.
It's a similar vein to that, in my mind. Like, for whatever reason, if I were to compare it to anything, that's what comes to mind, even though it's a very different genre. So, but you can see the DNA is kind of there, at least in my opinion. I'm sure other people would say I was out of my mind. Okay, so I'm going to take the obvious choice here.
And say, I didn't mean to throw you off. I am just curious about that.
That's okay. It's definitely worth discussing, because it is, in fact, on the same night as this next show. You couldn't have two shows that are more different, but somehow it works. The Expanse, Season 2, Episode 11, Here There Be Dragons. Bobby makes a decision that changes her life forever. And this got an 8 all around. Gary, why don't you go ahead and tell me why you thought that this episode got an 8?
Geez, there's a few different reasons. The actual defection scene was amazing, as she's beating, this pompous officer who's basically been telling her to omit details from this official hearing, to make stuff up. And she just has a chance, I swear, just to let loose on him. And not that I necessarily enjoy watching somebody get beat to a pulp, but it kind of felt like he deserved it the way that he had been manhandling her in a lot of ways. So, that was quite enjoyable. And I actually didn't – I don't know what I was expecting when she left there, but the actual defection sort of took me by surprise. I figured she was just going to go to the minister's office, but the defection was really interesting, and I thought that was good. The meeting with on Ganymede Station, where they decide to get back and try and find the where they meet the scientist that took that woman's. That man's child. I thought those scenes were very well done. I like the idea of this whole everybody's needing to get out of there that they were working on, and it the scene with what is it? The solo scenes on the Rosante with Alex, is it?
I believe so. Yeah.
I enjoy him talking to himself a little bit more than I should. Okay, well, I guess he's talking to the computer, but it seems like the actor's speaking to himself, and that's that's a lot of fun as he's piloting that thing around. Mm-hmm. It's really enjoyable as he's planning these, the different, okay, I need to take it in. And then the special effects people are doing such a good job as they project in this whole like circular spiral path for him to make it back to the planet, or to the moon. And it's, I'm enjoying the special effects, the conflict on multiple fronts that they're managing to juggle and show us enough of each one at a time that we're not getting turned off or disconnected from them at the same time, as they're jumping back and forth, between Earth, between and Ganymede, and they're balancing it quite well where nothing's really, taking too much. Even the Bobby, who's the person, the soldier who defects, she's almost got this mini story going on against the Earth politics going on versus all the stuff going on Ganymede, and they just seem to juggle it. Nothing seems to take precedent for me in this episode. There's no, I can't tell what the A plot is, and maybe that's intentional, that they are trying to juggle this huge world that they've created, and it's just it keeps going. It does make me curious to see how the book handles this, if they really juggle everything just the way that that the television series is. But I can't say I want to see more. I want to see more of everything, but it's not like, oh, I want to definitely see more of A or definitely see more of B. They seem to be balancing it quite well for me. Which aspect are you liking more, John? Are you more of the Rosinte crew? Do you like Avalasara on Earth? Is the whole Bobby thing sucking you in more? Like, do you have something you like more?
It's interesting that you put it that way, because I think that you're right. Right now, it's kind of... I am giving a lot of love to Bobby's storyline right now. I think that she has an amazing amount of range, considering the physicality that she's also being asked to pull off. I guess right now the weakest link is maybe what's going on the Rocinante and everything that's going on with Ganymede and this whole idea of the hybrids.
Yes.
I don't know that they set that up quite as much as I would like. But it might be that the beats in this episode were really trying to go for that horror vibe, and I don't necessarily mind that, but it is a little bit, it wasn't really led into as well as perhaps it could have been for me to give it, say, a higher score. I mean, 8's still very respectable, but it did feel like this was maybe the weakest episode of the season. And I'll say this, if this was the weakest episode of the season,
I'm good. Yeah.
Pretty good episode, yeah. A good series, right? Edmund had some comments on this one. He says here, even more of a setup than last week. Enjoyed the journey into the secret lab and the building tension between Holden's focus on eradication and a father still desperately trying to protect his child. However, Bobby's conversion didn't feel well earned. Sure, she's been abused by her commanders and the breakout was kick-ass, but we didn't get enough reasons for her to abandon the loyalty that's defined her life. And maybe that's what it is, that this, again, if you are aware, the fifth episode of the season was really the end of the first book. So I'm wondering if this is because there are those setup aspects of the first third or half of the second novel taking place in these episodes. And maybe it's just the fact that they have to dramatize some stuff that is just setting up the dominoes so that they can fall later. Because this does have that feel a little bit. That said, they're just knocking it out of the park as far as the writing is concerned, to the point that even an episode that doesn't quite come together is still better than most of what's on the air right now. So, maybe it didn't beat out Agents of Hydra this week. Got it right that time. Mm-hmm. Please don't kill me, guys. But it still was a solid effort. So, let's see. Is there anything else on this list that you would like to dig into while we have a little bit of time?
Yeah, I'll admit that I haven't been following it this season. I've pretty much wiped it off, but you do follow it, and I'd be curious to see how it's holding up and if they've changed premises at all. iZombie.
Okay. So we have iZombie Season 3, Episode 2, Zombie Knows Best. Liv, Clive, and Ravi investigate a fatal car accident and suspect foul play was involved. This is actually a really good example, because I didn't have a chance to put a note on this one, but this was pretty funny. Liv and Major, of course, both zombies at this point, wound up eating the brains of a father and teenage daughter. But it wasn't the order that you would think. Liv was the father, Major was the teenage daughter, and the two of them played those roles to the hilt, and it was hilarious. It was just really fun material for them to do. What's different this season, I think, is that the second season ended in a way that just blew up the whole idea of zombies being a secret. So now the third season is more about these guys living in a world now where humans know that zombies exist. And what does that mean for them, having been there from the beginning, and how do they deal with all of these challenges? So it is reinventing itself, to answer your question. It's not quite the same show that it started as, and it's staying a little more fresh because of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a really still an entertaining show. It's a very consistent show from my point of view, and it got an 8 this week, so. And roughly the same level as The Expanse. There you go.
Hmm.
A lot of shows got an 8 this week, which we'll reveal in just a moment, which is really good and kind of surprising. But it meant that there was a pretty consistent amount of quality out there this week. All right. Anything else that you're curious about, or should we go ahead and wrap this one up since it is?
No, let's go through the rest of them.
Oh, okay. So that would mean we have Supernatural season 12 episode 17, The British Invasion. It got an 8. Also getting an 8 was Riverdale season 1 episode 9, Le Grand Illusion. Colony season 2 episode 13, Ronin, the season finale, also came in at an 8. Into the Badlands, Season 2, Episode 4, Palm of the Iron Fox, came in at an 8, as did Outcast, Season 2, Episode 2, Episode 2. The Original, Season 4, Episode 4, Keepers of the House, got a 7.5, and finally, last but not least, 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 11, the penultimate episode of the season, 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., got a 7.5. See, it didn't take quite as long to go through the list that time, because there was like half the episodes, so. And next week is actually pretty short list as well, so kind of interesting the way that things are parsing out. But, all right, we are there and at the end of our week. So, Gary, any last thoughts?
I notice, you know, our scores are staying reasonably high, so I guess there's good quality TV out there right now. I'm particularly fond of some of the science fiction stuff that's out. I feel like Iron Fist is turning, well, at least as we're watching it episodically and not binging it, that it seems to be picking up, which is encouraging. And I'm really curious how Agents of HYDRA is going to resolve itself. So definitely anxious TV watching over the next week or so.
Absolutely. I mean, it is just, driving towards the end of its season. I guess there's 5 episodes left for Agents of HYDRA, so that's pretty good. I'm glad there's still plenty to go. All right, for me, I mean, we'll see what else is coming our way this week. I will mention that, as usual for the way that things go lately, there are actually a lot of premieres here in April. Next week, for instance, we have the 10th season premiere of Doctor Who. We have the U.S. premiere of its spin-off, Class. We have the return of The Leftovers for its third and final season. So that's quite a lot right there, just premiering next week. And then later on in the month, we have things like The Handmaid's Tale coming along and a few other shows that are premiering even in the sweeps month of May. So, yeah, there's our 12-month cycle for you.
Yeah, so much for seasons.
And actually, that will feed into a topic that I think we'll cover next week, which is, a consequence, perhaps, of these more shows having shorter seasons. It's coming to a head for certain people in the industry. But I'll leave that as a teaser for next time. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.